The Play's the Thing at Any Age on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Larry D'Autremont is with us today to talk about his work with Keisai's Second Avenue Players on Scribble. The Second Avenue Players. Actually, there's a rather distinguished theater in some other city that's called the Second Avenue Players. And how did that name come about? Or do you have knowledge of that?
Well, I'm having a brain freeze here on his name. He's one of our players that's there except in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
Former Scott County supervisor. He's going to kick me when I can't think
of
his name.
Well, that's okay.
Before the program's over, I'll think of it.
But the Second Avenue Players perform plays at Keisai, is that it?
That's correct. We do reader's theater.
The safe kind.
Right. We don't memorize anything.
Yeah.
Our cast is made up of 60, 70, and we have one young lady who's in her 80s in it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How many of you are there?
They what?
How many of you are there?
How many?
Oh, there's about, it varies. I want to guess from 8 to 10, maybe 12.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find plays that have that many in the cast. So we usually put on two so everybody can,
mm-hmm.
I think it's important that everybody get in.
But you actually write plays, don't you?
Yes. It all started back, I don't know, you know Dino Hayes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, he was the first director we had. And we did some play or two, and I thought, you know, I can write something for here. And I took an old off-color joke. And I rewrote it into a skit, probably three, maybe four pages. And he liked it. I cleaned it up, of course. He liked it, and we put it on. And then he had us go over to Rock Island, to his studio next to the Flag Place.
Right.
In Rock Island.
Uh-huh.
And that's how it started. And I just
so there
met with approval, so I thought, well, I'll just keep going. And then he left, and Barb Budig took over as a director, and she like my plays, so I.
All you need is encouragement.
A little encouragement, and what she wanted and liked was nostalgia.
Uh huh.
So I started putting nostalgia in things that happened around Davenport and the Quad Cities when we were younger, mm-hmm. which brings me to the play we're going to put on Friday the 13th, called Fur Elise. It's about, I'm one of the characters in it, and I play myself.
Well, I imagine you're well prepared for that part now.
It's a true story. Okay, uh-huh. It's about my friend Jim. There were two girls down at the root beer stand. I had a date with one of them, and the other one liked my friend Jim. Jim was bashful, so the two girls get together and they invite Jimmy and I to a card party at one of the girls' houses. And we get there, and Jimmy meets Precious's sister and takes a liking to her. So we got this.
So we have a few cross lines of affection here. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Are you the only one who writes plays, or are there other people who contribute plays?
So far, I'm the only one.
Mm-hmm. So are these all original to you, or do you rewrite existing plays?
I've rewritten I got it on my list here.
One of those plays.
The Cremation of Sam McGee.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting sidelight to that was we read the play, and I thought I can make that into a... We read the poem, and I thought I can make that into a play, and I did, and we're ready to put it on. And a gentleman in Davenport has his obituary in the paper. I don't know if I should tell you his name or not, but he was a well-known Davenporter. And in his obituary, it said he liked poetry. And his favorite poem was The Cremation of Sam McGee.
So the theatrical angels were on your side.
Right. I've also, the most popular one that I've written was a parody or whatever of The Honeymooners. Hmm. And I wrote two versions of that. The first version, I played Ralph, incidentally. And I had slipped and had surgery on my knee. And I... using a walker, and so our director decided I can't be carrying a bowling ball bag in at the start of the play, so I rewrote that into a radio version. And in the radio version, a tape recording, I found copies of three old commercials that I played between the scenes. Rival dog food, arf, 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 arf. I Wish I Were an Oscar Mayer Weenie.
Oh, yes.
And
gotta have that.
My Bologna Has a First Name. So to separate the scenes, I put those in there. And I think that, so far, that's been the one that has the most popular response. We put that on at KSI, and then we put it on at Ridgecrest. One of our members lives at Ridgecrest and arranged for us to go out there and put it on at Ridgecrest. And then I belong to Our Lady of Victory Parish in Davenport. And quarterly, we have a senior lunch on Sunday after 11 o'clock Mass. And the lady in charge heard I did these plays and invited our group to put on The Honeymooners was the second one. The previous year, we did The Lone Ranger. Now, in my story, The Lone Ranger takes place in Christmas week 1899. The Lone Ranger and Tonto now live in a poor farm in West Texas. Okay. And Butch Cavendish is released from prison and comes down because the warden doesn't want to deal with dying men. He's got cancer and he's going to die. So that was the
Butch Cavendish joins the Lone Ranger and Tonto. You know, this is interesting that, of course, I've been playing with theater all my life, and it's interesting that Kasai has a theatrical operation. Where do you do it? Where do you perform at Kasai?
Well, we don't have a stage. Mm-hmm. We have a big open room, and it has sliding doors so we can turn it off. And we practice there, and we got from 10:30 to 11:30, and we got to be out of there at 11:30 because the euchre crowd starts coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a well-used facility.
Now, you're going to be performing this coming Friday. At what time of day do you perform?
10:30 in the morning.
10:30, okay.
And we're going to put two plays on. One, I took an old Archie Campbell from Hee Haw story called Trouble in the Amen Corner, and I turned that into a play in which we needed more spots for women because the Fur Elise has four girls in it. The people in their 60s, 70s, and 80s are going to play 16 and 17-year-olds.
Well, that's fine with me. From my vantage point, they sound like kids anyway.
Well, I think every one of us remembers back when we were first getting involved with members of the opposite sex and the problems that came up and how you had to be a he-man, but yet
you had to be not just an athlete, you had to be softer human being.
Yeah, well, the athletes, they led a different life.
Yeah.
But I mean, West End of Davenport, we, Jimmy and I, we had our... Well, he had an adventure.
Yeah. How often do you present plays in a year?
I'm going to guess 4, maybe 5 mm-hmm. Times. Okay. Sometimes we do one play, sometimes we do two.
And are there enough people to do the plays always? Are there enough people interested in performing? Or do you have to go out and recruit players?
The only recruiting I know is when we put a play on, we point out that there's a shortage of men.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. In the play Trouble in the Amen Corner, the pastor is a woman.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And in the Lone Ranger, when we did the Lone Ranger, we put it on at Kasai, and the guy who played it went on vacation. We had to have a woman play the Lone Ranger at church, and she put the mask on. And
so, how large an audience do you have typically?
Oh, there's probably 40. I'm going to guess. Mostly friends of the cast and regular members of the of Kasai. There's just an awful lot of things go on at Kasai.
Yeah, it seems to be a very busy place. How long does it take you to write a play?
I can write a play in 3 days and then spend the next 6 weeks fixing it.
No. Do they do plays other than yours?
Yes. She's. I've got a play waiting to do, and she told me we're going to be doing two other plays before we get to mine. So I'm not the only one that my plays are done there. She, our director, Janet, gets them from somewhere.
But don't you sometimes take those plays and alter them a little for the readers that you've got?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
But there are Reader's Theater plays out there.
Okay.
I think they're mainly used by in schools.
Right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, there are a lot of sources for plays, and Reader's Theater is something that people find a little easier to do rather than to go through the process of memorization. Because particularly when you do a play, you get up on a stage, you've memorized lines, and suddenly you see people, and your brain does funny things. Sometimes it washes it clean. And so memorization is a skill that we gradually lose as we age. So Reader's Theater is a pretty good approach to that, and still keep doing plays. Are the people happy to do the plays? Do they like to do them?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, that's good, because if you have to dragoon people into it, it's not so much fun. But doing plays is, I think, well, you've enjoyed that all your life, haven't you?
No. I'm not trying to butter you up, but the first play I was in was a Genesius Guild when I was in my late 60s.
Uh-huh.
Okay? I often thought that's something I would like to do, but I was riding in the car listening to you on the radio or somebody, uh-huh. and they said, tryouts for Genesius Guild are whatever day it was, and you don't have to have any experience. So I went over to the park, and while I was waiting, I met a guy named Earl.
Oh, yeah.
Stroop. Yeah.
Earl Stroop, yeah.
Okay, I couldn't remember his last name, but he said, if you want a part, articulate clearly and speak loudly. Okay? Which I did, and I got into the first play was Prometheus Bound.
Oh, yeah.
And I played the an ocean god.
Yeah, Okeanos, the god, yeah.
And it was so strange to me because there was a woman director, and I'm talking to Prometheus, who's behind me, chained to raised up. And she said, now, you project out to that tree out there.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is good. And then we had to dress down a block away, and you made these goddess big masks, and it was hotter than blazes. And
you had a good introduction to theater. Getting in on Prometheus, that's the very beginning of theater. So you were there at the start, and now here you are at KSI writing your own plays and doing them. That sounds like a nice creative arc.
From there, I went into other plays. I got into Gypsy in Maquoketa, where I played three characters, none of which were very, very large. And then I got into the most wonderful play ever written, The Music Man.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I wanted to get in that, and I went out and I tried, and you had to bring music. Okay, you had to sing. I can't sing. But there were, I don't know, 30 or 40 of us auditioning, and she took 8 or 10 of us at a time. And I went in there, and there was this little kid, and he sang. And when he got done singing, she said, you see that window in the back? I want you to sing to people on the other side of that. And he did it again, only this time, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so I marked that down in my head. And when I got up, I think I sang Buttons and Bows.
Uh-huh.
Okay, I like the line in there, my bones denounce the buckboard bounce, and the cactus hurts my toes. So, but I told her I didn't dance. So I got in the play with one line. Okay, one line. And I remember when the play started. You're sitting on a train behind the curtain.
Oh, yeah.
And the band started to play the overture. And I'm telling you, the hair on my arms just stood up. That was just so neat.
Yeah. Well, and now, you know, from performance, you are performing and writing. And that's good that you keep it up. And I'm really glad to hear that they use an aspect of theater at Keisei, because at any age, that's a good way to spend your time.
Okay.
But there this Friday, then, at 10:30 at Keisei, we'll have a chance to see what the Second Avenue Players can do.
Do we have time to hear a couple of lines from a play that he's written, or are we out?
Okay, we're almost out, but read us a couple of lines.
Okay. There's a knock on the door. Come in, Jimmy. Thanks, Timmy. Remember I called you and asked to teach me to play Fur Elise on the piano. Tim, have you ever had music lessons? No, none, but I can play three chords with my left hand and the melody by hunting and pecking with my right hand. I see. Why do you want to play Fur Elise? This Saturday night, I promised a really cute girl that I could play Fur Elise for her, and so now I have to learn it. By Saturday night? Yes, by Saturday night. Can you read music? No, not a note. Oh my, Jimmy, this will be a challenge. Thank the Lord you didn't tell her you could play Flight of the Bumblebee.
Very good. I'd say that dialogue will work. Well, Larry, I'm glad to see that you continue in theater. Starting kind of late, but still going. That's really great.
Starting with Don Wooten at Genesis.
Right.
Oh, my goodness. And I wonder if you'll ever overcome that. Thanks a lot. And remember, the performance of the Second Avenue Players will be 10:30 this coming Friday at Keisei. Our guest today is author and actor Larry Entremont. Thanks again, Larry.
You bet.
And now, in the second act of today's Scribble, Roald Tweet will play the part of a book reviewer.
I have two books that I came across just by accident, and I came across them after I'd seen a program on television on compassion. It got me intrigued. Compassion is defined by that kind of person who donates a kidney to an entire stranger. Why would someone ever do that? And they discovered that people who are compassionate, the part of their brain that among other things, deals with compassion is significantly larger than the average part of the human brain. So that there is just something going on in that person. There are people who are innately compassionate.
You know, it's interesting that if you don't have the right parts in your brain, you don't have what we might consider these spiritual qualities.
Right. Anyway, here are the two books. The first one, and both of these are debut novels, which I'm sort of fond of. Interesting to see how they go. This one is called Say, Say, Say by Lila Savage, just spelled just the way it sounds. The main character is Ella, who's 30. She has dropped out at the age of 20. She dropped out of graduate school. And for the past 10 years, she's become a caregiver for people who want to stay at home, couples who have Alzheimer's and so forth. The book deals with the new job that she has, taking care of a wife with Alzheimer's disease. The wife's name is Joy, and the husband's name is Bryn. For the last 5 years, he has been her caregiver, and she's now at the point, the wife, where it's just impossible for him to do it alone. And so in comes Ella to serve as a caregiver for money, $20 an hour. And her job as a caregiver is to befriend people. And the whole conflict here is, can you both befriend somebody and do it for money?
Mm-hmm.
The money screws things up. But it is a wonderful, touching story of a woman trying to care for and a husband trying to care for a wife who's in the last stages of Alzheimer's disease. The second book is called Idaho, another debut novel by Emily Ruskovich, R-U-S-K-O-V-I-C-H. And it is the story of a woman, a middle-aged woman, who falls in love and marries a man whom she knows is already in the early stages of Alzheimer's disease. And it isn't going to get any better. Not only that, but he has a really checkered past. His wife, who's now serving a life term in prison for killing one of their two girls, and the other girl has gone missing. And it's a study of a woman who compassionately, but also lovingly, marries this man for whom she knows there's no good end. Why would somebody do that? How do things proceed? There's no happy ending to either of these stories, but they really are interesting studies of compassion.
Yeah, compassion is when you encounter real compassion or you experience feelings of genuine compassion, it is a wonderful thing. But without compassionate people, I don't know how the world could survive. I might mention one book that came out in June, recent talk of buying Greenland, and not only that, but the lungs of the world are aflame in the Amazon. 20% of our oxygen comes from that forest. It sets up the weather machine. We lose that. Lord knows what the world is. But there's a book called The Ice at the End of the World, An Epic Journey into Greenland's Buried Past and Our Perilous Future by John Gertner. He goes into Greenland, and going into Greenland means going miles deep into the ice. But he points out that they're losing billions of pounds of ice. And the problem with losing ice at Greenland is that's ice on land. And that will cause, as it goes into the ocean, it'll cause the waters to rise. Ice comes off Antarctica. It's like ice cubes in a glass, you know. But losing ice in Greenland, and this June is the warmest month we've ever had in the world's history that we know of.
The oceans will rise 8 feet if Greenland ice melts.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of tough times, but if you want to know the whole story on Greenland, John Gertner has a great book, The Ice at the End of the World, and we're at the end of our program. But thank you very much for joining us today. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll be back next week with another Scribble